from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up in Forum's opening hour, a study by the American Cancer Society found that aggressive early screening for both breast cancer and prostate cancer may actually do greater harm than good. We'll focus in the next hour on whether to screen or not to screen as we hear from both sides on the issue and take your calls and emails. Forum is next after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's forum. A study which appeared in JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association, found that aggressive early screening for breast cancer, mammography, and for prostate cancer, PSA tests, may actually cause more harm than good. We're going to discuss the value of tests for these two cancers in this opening forum hour, as well as whatever attendant risks are or might be associated with testing. And joining us is Dr. J. Leonard Lichtenfeld, who is Deputy Chief Medical Officer with the American Cancer Society. He's with us this morning from Jacksonville, Florida. And good morning.
Good morning.
Glad to have you aboard. Also glad to have Dr. Laura Esserman, who is Professor of Surgery and Radiology and directs the Breast Care Center Organization at UCSF and is lead author of the new study I alluded to, which is titled Rethinking for Breast Cancer and Prostate Cancer in the current issue of the Journal of the American Medical Association. Welcome, Laura Esserman.
Thank you.
Also with us this morning is George Sledge, professor of oncology and co-director of the breast cancer program at Indiana University. He is also president-elect of the American Society of Clinical Oncology, and we welcome you, George Sledge.
Glad to be here.
Glad to have you all here. And let me begin, Dr. Lichtenfeld, if I may, with you. There's a good deal of concern, and in fact, even heat, I might say, about the wrong message coming out from this study that screening is perhaps not all that necessary, particularly where mammography is concerned. Let's get it from your perspective.
Well, obviously, I'm pleased to be here, and I'm particularly pleased that Dr. Esserman's on the call because I certainly think that she's the one who's going to answer whether she thinks that that's what her study says. From my point of view, what Dr. Esserman and the other authors said was we need to pay attention to the fact that screening is not as perfect as some people think it is, and that we really could do better in terms of our research agenda and being able to target who needs to be screened and what we should do with the results of that screening in terms of who needs to be treated. But the reality is that I don't think that the message, and this is one of the problems with the publicity, I don't think the message was that women should not be screened, that it's bad to be screened, that it's harmful to be screened. I think what the message was that came out of that study was people need to have a more realistic expectation of what screening can accomplish and what it doesn't accomplish. At least that's my sense of the situation. I think people need to be very cautious about the message as you just related it, Michael.
Well, the American Cancer Society still recommends for women over 40 mammography and annually, and that men make informed decisions with their doctors on whether or not to have a PSA test. But I must tell you, I had a conversation last night on stage here locally with Dr. J. Michael Bishop, the Nobel recipient, who was talking with me about cancer research. And he said PSAs were kind of looked down upon and given maybe shorter shrift quite some time ago. I'm talking about the prostate cancer test, of course.
Whether they were given short shrift, I think the bottom line is that unlike with mammography, where we've done a lot of research on the benefits, risks, and harms of mammography, we have not done a lot of research up until recently, at least published the results of the research on prostate cancer screening. And I think it's about time that perhaps our rhetoric catches up with our science. I started as a practicing physician in the late 1980s recommending PSAs when it became available. But we never really had the good science that we needed to say that it saved lives. Now, the science is being published, and the results are not quite so conclusive that it saves lives. It may save some lives. There's a debate about that, but it's really not as conclusive as we would like it to be. So men do need to be informed. They need to understand. Doesn't mean they shouldn't be screened, but if they're going to be screened, they need to understand the total picture and not just walk in blindly and say, this is something that's going to save my life.
So, Dr. Laura Esserman, what does your study say, that screening where prostate cancer is maybe not routinely advised, and mammography does certainly, as Dr. Lichtenfeld said, reduce breast cancer? So where are we with mammography screening?
So I can understand how people are anxious and confused about this message, but I think what we're trying to do is say pretty much what Dr. Lichtenfeld said. We're trying to make sure that people are aware of the limitations of screening. Screening is not perfect, and it's not going to help every situation. And I think that so it's very important to understand what screening can and cannot do. If you don't understand what the problems are that are generated by screening, you can't guard against them and you can't fix them. As my friend George Sledge says, those are all kinds of breast cancers, right? There's killer cancers. What do you say, George, that cancer is like a bunch of murderers? Some are petty thieves. I mean, a bunch of criminals, and some are petty thieves, and some are murderers. So for the person, one of the problems with screening is there's no question that it's going to find, the more you look, it's going to find more of these petty thieves that aren't really going to make a difference in whether or not people live or die. So once you're aware of that, I think you can also make sure that one of the things you say if someone gets a screen-detected cancer, that we want to know, well, what kind of cancer is it, and make sure we guard against over-treatment. The reason Dr. Thompson and I put these two cancers together is that it's, you know, we worked together in the Early Detection Research Network, and it struck us how incredibly similar the problems are, and it really helps us understand about screening. Screening makes a difference for cancers that tend to be more moderate growth cancers or slower growing cancers like cervical cancer or from getting adenomatous polyps out and colon cancer. You've seen the invasive cancer rates go down in cervical cancer. They've gone down in colon cancer. But in both breast and prostate cancer, the rates have gone up. The rates of cancer detection have gone up significantly since we started screening. And the problem with that is that most of the cancers that we're detecting at an early stage on the surface, that's good. But on the flip side, we are not seeing the same decline in the number of aggressive cancers or later stage cancers. So that tells us that what we're doing is that we're finding some things that maybe wouldn't have come to clinical attention or that don't make as much of a difference. So you have to be aware of that when you screen. And when we tell people, I think it's important that people be aware of what they can expect from screening. For, you know, and we don't know yet what kinds of cancers people are at risk for. That's one of the things that we have to do a better job of.
So your main concern here is the risk of overtreating some of these smaller cancers, but I'm seeing reduction rates as high as 20% as a result of mammography.
No. So when people say that there are randomized clinical trials that have shown for women 50 to 70 that there's a 20 to 30% reduction in the chance of dying of cancer, but that doesn't, so certain kinds of cancers, if you find them early, it makes a difference. But the problem is, the screening can generate detection of early cancers that aren't going to be life-threatening, so people need to know that that's a possibility and take time to find out how serious their cancer is and what kind of treatment they need. But the second thing that we have to be aware of is that people with more aggressive cancers will still come to clinical attention between screens. So if someone shows up with a lump or a mass between normal screen, you must pay attention to it because those can be the aggressive cancers that we care most about. And as Dr. Lichtenfeld said, we need to do a better job with our research agenda of trying to find out, okay, what do we know about the biology of these cancers? How can we figure out, you know, how can we figure out how to prevent some of those cancers or figure out who's at risk for those kinds of cancers.
Is it fair to say, Dr. Esserman, that the conclusion of the study, and by the way, you might talk about whether or not what we have here is a study or an opinion, because some have been critical and some who have even been not so critical have said it's more an opinion piece than original research. I'd like your response to that. But is it fair to say that what we're talking about here is, the advantages of screening simply being overstated and exaggerated?
Well, I think I think we've overpromised a bit on screening. That's not the same thing as saying that there's no value to screening. But I think as I said before, you have to know what it can do and what it can't do, and that gives us an opportunity to move on. I mean, for example, one of the things you can look at and say, are there populations of people for whom screening isn't likely to make a difference, either because the risk of cancer is low or because, you know, the chance of having, you know, a finding low-risk or non-aggressive cancers is very high. So in women over the age of 75, for example, we don't have any data, or over 70, we don't have any data that screening makes a difference in improving mortality. And the older you get, the more likely you are to get these slow-growing cancers. So, in fact, that's a group that we should not be pushing for screening. You know, but so we want to tailor our recommendations, and we want to prepare women when they go to get screening, what may happen. They may get called back, not to panic, you know, that you know, even if they get called for a biopsy, that, you know, that it likely isn't going to be cancer. And if it is cancer, that we're going to take time to make sure that what kind of cancer it is. That's by understanding what screening is doing and what it isn't doing.
And is this original research, or is this an opinion piece?
Well, I think it's an integration of the two. Both Dr. Thompson and I have been involved in a lot of the studies that we commented on, and it's about synthesizing information in a way that we can get the message out to people. I mean, Dr. Thompson has been very much involved in a lot of the work in prostate cancer screening and prevention. And I also have been very much involved in trying to look at the kinds, you know, how aggressive cancers are detected and how to find better tools for detecting these high-risk cancers. So, you know, we're putting our work together with the work that many, many other people have put together, and we're putting it together in a way that tells a story about screening in general. And those of us who are in the field understand it. And it seems like it's complex, but it's complex because cancer isn't one disease, and it's a little bit more complex than that. So we have to tailor our message a little bit differently. I think Dr. Sledge could you know, has been one of the proponents of making sure that people understand that. And you know, maybe you'd like to comment, George.
Well, let me bring George Sledge into this. In fact, George Sledge, I think you find the recommendations here a bit murky, don't you, or vague at least.
You mean for a mammography or for prostate cancer?
Well, generally, what's more for prostate cancer, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you look, for instance, at the American Cancer Society guidelines for prostate cancer, the guidelines in essence say that if you're in the appropriate age group for consideration of screening, that a man should talk to his doctor about whether or not to have a PSA test. I think you'd have to say that that is a relatively vague recommendation. Now, in contrast, the screening mammography recommendations are much more direct in that we, based on the ACS guidelines, routinely recommend screening mammography for women over the age of 40.
But so, it's certainly true, as Dr. Esserman said, that we need to learn more about the biology of these diseases to find out really what's more aggressive and to treat appropriately. We've got a big bar to go up to on that score, don't we?
That's absolutely correct. And in fact, I would say, and I'm sure Laura Esserman would agree, that we are learning a huge amount about the biology of both of these diseases. Now, in breast cancer in particular, and this is why I think we need to be very careful about this message, a recent study done off of one of the very large adjuvant trials, what's called the ATAC trial for early-stage breast cancer patients, looked at both classical stage issues such as size and lymph node status, and also looked at the biology using a test called an Oncotype test. And the conclusion of that fairly large study was that both classical things such as size and stage, as well as the biology, both help to determine prognosis. They don't correlate very well with each other, but they're both independent predictors of prognosis. So that sort of analysis suggests to me that big tumors are bad tumors, but they're also tumors that are bad based on their biology and that they have to be treated very specifically to their biology.
Really, you need how to learn more about separating high and low risk, huh?
Yeah, we need to be able to separate the wheat from the chaff. The problem that we have as clinicians is that when a woman comes in to see us who's never been diagnosed with breast cancer, and we have a mammogram that shows an abnormality, that mammogram does not tell us whether or not that is wolf or sheep, whether or not it is a killer or a petty thief. And so saying that we can eliminate screening at this point, unfortunately, I think just isn't the case.
What about some of the risks where screening is concerned? I mean, there's been certainly a lot of controversy on that score for many years now. How do you come down?
Well, there are real risks. I mean, first off, of course, economically, every time you have an imaging procedure, it costs you money. It takes time out of your life. If you have a false positive biopsy, you've had an unnecessary biopsy in that it will not save your life. And as Laura and Dr. Thompson in their paper have certainly suggested, there are undoubtedly breast cancers that even when detected are not likely to rob the patient of her life. So I think those are all real issues. I don't think they eliminate the fact that in multiple randomized trials, screening mammography lowers the risk of dying of breast cancer.
As long as we're talking about mammography, Dr. Sledge, I noticed Dr. Patricia Gans, whom I'm sure you know, who directs the Cancer Prevention and Control Research over at UCLA's Johnson Comprehensive Cancer Center, says maybe we shouldn't even start screening women until they're postmenopausal.
Well, I think where screening is a little bit more controversial is in the age groups of 40 to 50. And I think that's a conversation that people need to have with their physicians. And I think you can use some of that based on what your risk factors are. Just like Dr. Thompson is suggesting, you know, you could go, if you Google, prostate cancer risk calculator, you can go to the calculator that sort of tells you, are you at risk for getting high risk cancer or high grade cancer? You're someone who probably should get screened. And I think that, you know, we're not quite there in breast cancer, but we could be if we get our research agenda going. And, you know, I think a group of women who we really need to be very serious about not screening is women over the age of 75. And I think that, you know, and I want to make clear, I'm not saying we should stop screening. I'm saying, both Dr. Thompson and I are saying, you know, we need to be aware and patients need to be aware of what screening can do and it can't do. Make sure that people understand if they have symptoms, even if they've had a normal screen, that they need to go in and talk to their doctors because some of the most aggressive cancers can present that way. And we're also saying is to stop and take stock if you have a diagnosis and you know, not think that every cancer is going to be a killer cancer. That will, and we need to start developing and using the kinds of tools that are emerging in breast cancer for sure. You know, they're helping us, you know, do a molecular characterization of these tumors. And, you know, as we start doing that, we'll do a much better job of understanding who's at risk for what kind of cancer.
In fact, if I could just add a word here, Dr. Esserman, I mentioned talking last night with Mike Bishop, your former chancellor, and he was saying with gene sequencing and with genomics, we're pretty much on the brink here of being able to establish a great deal more than we've ever imagined.
Correct. And so this is an opportunity. It tells us that there's a need. There's a need to characterize these tumors at diagnosis, to do a better job of understanding whether they're the petty thief or the murderer, and to make sure that people are prepared. I don't think we do a service to people to keep the message so simple that it's cancer, yes or no, and that all cancers are killer cancers. That's not helpful. And I think that as a community, what we want to do is start to really focus on, you know, if you don't recognize that these types of entities are out there, then you can't really make a difference or make things better. But if you say, oh, look at that, isn't that interesting? Some of the cancers we're finding maybe aren't going to harm people, so we should really start focusing on fine-tuning our ability to tell which of, you know, how these cancers are going to behave. And as we start to learn that cancers really have little or no chance of causing someone to die, then we can rename them. And that's why we had suggested something like an idle tumor. You know, that's something else so that we can move on.
Michael, if I may, I apologize for interrupting, but I think that this is all important and it's all interesting, and I think that the information are things that people should know. But as I mentioned in my blog yesterday, I'm not sure that at least within the profession that this is necessarily news. We've known that there have been relatively quote-unquote benign or less aggressive cancers. We've known that for many years.
Too many innocuous cancers.
That's right. That's not news. But I think that something is very important here and a very important distinction. Once again, I made a comment about PSA screening, about the rhetoric getting ahead of the science. We are improving our science, but I'm not sure that we're there yet. And if your listeners take out of the conversation and take out of all this debate that we have the techniques that have been proven to allow us to do some of the things to be more more specific, and we've conclusively demonstrated that. I think that's beyond where we are. Now, not to disagree with some of the comments that have been made with regard to screening older women. I think that's a very real issue that needs to be addressed. But we need to develop the science. We need to demonstrate through the appropriate channels, the appropriate research, that the science, in fact, stands up in clinical practice. But not necessarily that you can walk into your doctor today. And that's the misfortune of this. That is the misfortune. I mean, the reality is we do have a tool that's effective. It's not as effective as we would like it to be, but it's the tool we have. People should be aware. They should understand the limitations, the benefits, the risks, the harms. But it is the tool. And as we go, do we have other tools that have been conclusively demonstrated to allow us to make that next leap? I don't think we're there yet. We clearly need to do more work, and there was an extensive portion of Dr. Esserman's paper that was devoted to proposing those types of algorithms, those types of approaches. But again, it was shown if we had the information, this is what we could accomplish. I think that's the message that people need to understand from what is, in fact, a very complex issue.
Well, the American Cancer Society did recommend mammography for women over 40 and said, in fact, that mammography is effective. I think perhaps what it comes down to is how do we avoid over-treatment from over-diagnosis? That seems to be one of the central questions that's looming over this conversation. Dr. Esserman, I believe you were going to say something.
Yeah, I think that we have more tools available than we realize. I think that the tools that we have actually do help us say that, but I think that we're not going to be able to move forward with this agenda unless people accept the fact that there are different kinds of cancers, both the public, you know, and our treating community. So that I think the more people, I think what Dr. Thompson and I were trying to do was show actually how similar the situations are with breast and prostate and how important it is to make sure that people are aware of this, both from the treatment community and the patient community, so that when their physicians say, look, we think, you know, we need to start moving on this agenda to say, you know, you probably have a lower risk tumor. We can start doing less for you. And we can start using the molecular tools, even the ones that are on the market today, to start, you know, with new studies and trials to test this. So when women are encouraged to participate in studies and clinical studies to help us confirm that this is the case, they shouldn't be frightened and feel like people are unnecessarily or people are taking care away from them. We're looking for opportunities to safely do less. Who wouldn't welcome that if they thought there was a way to do that? So we're trying to lay the groundwork so that we can move forward with this agenda to help us learn how to tailor our treatment recommendations and how to tailor our screening recommendations.
We're coming up on a break. I want to just ask Dr. Lichtenfeld, I know you have to go, or do you have to go?
I have to leave at 12:30, yes. 9:30 your time, yes.
Final suggestion from you, then, before we say goodbye to you, about what you would advise consumers, particularly where we've seen this analogy between mammography and PSA tests, what to do about screening.
Well, I think that the most important part, I mean, it's very hard to work in a soundbite world, and doctors don't live in soundbite world, so it is complicated. For now, we still make the recommendation about screening mammography for women age 40 and over. Do we say that we're always going to say that? No. We constantly review our guidelines based on evidence and we'll change our recommendations. On PSA screening, the jury's still out, at least from our point of view. So we don't view them as necessarily similar situations.
Right.
The worst thing would be for women to say, no, I won't go, as a result of all the publicity. I think that would be a mistake.
Dr. Lichtenfeld, I thank you, Deputy Chief Medical Officer of the American Cancer Society. You are welcome to join us. Our toll-free number is available to you now, so join the program at 866-733-6786. That's toll-free, 866-733-6786, or send an email, forum@kqed.org. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. A new study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association finds that aggressive early screening for breast cancer and prostate cancer may do more harm than good, and we're discussing whether recommendations for healthy people to get mammograms and prostate cancer screening should be changed. We spoke in the first half hour of the program with Dr. J. Leonard Lichtenfeld, who is Deputy Chief Medical Officer of the American Cancer Society. And I'm looking at ABC News bulletin here that says Cancer Society catches heat for breast prostate cancer screening criticism. Top ACS officials' statements on some cancer tests has docs locked in debate. Well, that's the way, I guess, commercial media frames things. We're talking about it here from a number of perspectives. Dr. Laura Esserman with us for the hour is actually lead author of this new study, which is titled Rethinking for Breast Cancer and Prostate Cancer in the current issue of JAMA, Journal of the American Medical Association. She's professor of surgery and radiology and directs the Breast Care Center at University of California here in San Francisco. And Dr. George Sledge with us from Indianapolis at Indiana University is professor of oncology there and co-directs the Breast Cancer Program at Indiana U and is also president-elect of the American Society of Clinical Oncology. Let us go right to your phone calls. And Wendy, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me on. I am a Caucasian woman who recently returned for a magnified mammogram that was inconclusive and feel that I'm definitely the target kind of audience that we're speaking about on this slippery slope of increased need for diagnosis and screening, yet because of the location of where the abnormality is, the mammogram was inconclusive and unable to capture it, and now I'm on this path of having to have increased interventions for kind of uncertain gains, I guess, from what I'm hearing and what all my research has indicated. So how do we advise consumers on being informed? And that's one thing, but I'm informed. It doesn't seem to be able to stop the train I'm on.
You're informed, but you're on the cusp here. Yeah. Dr. Lasserman, some thoughts?
Right. So I think that another important message about this study is that it's not that screening's in itself is bad, but perhaps it's what we do with the information that is not as good as it might be. So I think one of the things that we can start to do now, and one of the things that we try and do in our center, for example, is when people have an abnormality, we try and say, well, what is this at risk for? You know, is this likely to be either nothing or some low-grade DCIS that we don't need to know about? And you know, something like that, that maybe we can be more judicious about who we call back and what we call, what we have people come back for extra screening or extra biopsies for. And I think that being clear about what our goals are with screening and saying, look, we're looking for invasive cancers. We're not looking for every precursor to cancer. That actually, I think, can help us reduce the number of biopsies quite substantially. And so that I think one of the questions you can ask is whether or not you have a biopsy is, well, how much risk is this something risk for invasive cancer? Is it risk for in situ cancer? Is it really low risk? And those are things that can help you try and understand whether you really need to have a biopsy, either a surgical biopsy or a core biopsy. And maybe we can let a few more things go and just, you know, watch carefully and, again, reassure people differently. So understanding what's happened over the last 25 years can inform us about changing some of our recommendations and testing, again, safely doing less. Does that make sense?
Are you still there, caller?
Yes,
Wendy?
I am.
Yeah, yeah. She asked you, I think, directly, want to know if that makes sense to you, how she explained it.
It does make sense. My question is who provides that type of, you know, level of advice and consultation? So
we have
accessing those details gets a little
right.
Difficult.
So you know, what we've tried to do in our program is we have a same day program where we have a diagnostic evaluation program, and where the surgeons and the mammographers evaluate the patients together. So on the recalls, and we make recommendations to patients about, you know, what we think the risks and benefits of a biopsy would be, whether we could safely forego it, and whether we can come up with an alternative. And we're actually working on starting a clinical trial of watching some of these less suspicious lesions, so we can help move the field forward.
But look, if you have, for example, Dr. Esserman, a history in the family of breast cancer that's fairly pronounced, you're going to be more aggressive, aren't you?
Certainly, if you are. But again, if there's, I think the way we want to start thinking about things is to say, well, what? First of all, if someone's at high risk, one of the things that we want to think about is prevention. So if I see a young woman who has a cluster of risk factors where I think their lifetime risk is 40%, and perhaps they're not a BRCA1 or 2 mutation carrier, but they still have a very high risk for breast cancer, more important than screening might even be thinking about starting a chemo prevention regimen, taking something like tamoxifen, which we know reduces the risk of breast cancer, you know, substantially in younger women in particular, and where it's incredibly safe. So I think we need to have a more comprehensive way that we're approaching this. And Dr. Thompson and I feel strongly for both breast and prostate cancer that one of our jobs in screening is not just to be doing mammograms, but to be screening for people who we think are in these higher risk situations, try and direct. You know, in breast cancer, we can do BRCA1 or BRCA2 testing. We can try and figure out whether we think certain kinds of chemo prevention options are appropriate. So if you were at risk for prostate cancer and you had a high risk on the prostate cancer risk calculator, you know, you could think about should you go on finasteride. So we want to make sure that we think about prevention opportunities as a result of screening. So you want to be screened for high risk, as well as think about, well, you know, other than just PSA or mammography, that those are part of the tools that we should be taking into account when women come in.
Let me go back to you, Dr. Sledge, because you had said earlier that screening is by no means perfect and that you find often small numbers of cancers and it's expensive and we might add false positives. But on the whole, screening does save lives, and there's ample evidence for that.
Yes, and screening is a population-based approach to medicine. And like all population-based approaches, it implies that you are looking at far larger number of women or men in the case of PSA than are ever actually going to develop the cancer. So it is necessarily wasteful until we find a better way of finding those cancers.
On the other hand, the bigger the numbers, the more data you have, the more empirical data you have.
Yes, and as we said in the first half of the hour, I think the data that mammography saves lives is certainly stronger than the data that PSA test saves lives.
Let me bring more of our callers in. And on PSAs, Rick from Mill Valley, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. There is such a strong correlation between the time when PSA testing was introduced back in the late 80s, early 90s, when there were 36,000 deaths from PSA, compared today from prostate cancer, compared to today when there's 27,000 deaths from prostate cancer, that I really would challenge anybody to say that PSA screening has not been beneficial. I have locally advanced prostate cancer. I'm at the end of 2 years of hormone therapy. I actually work with Laura. We're trying to set up an exercise and cancer program at UCSF. I am on the Prostate Cancer Advocates Committee at UCSF, and I'm also on the ACS Local Advisory in Marin. And we're absolutely up in arms about ACS and how they responded yesterday. I mean, I absolutely agree with Laura's research. I mean, I would go as far as to say that
ACS, by the way, American Cancer Society.
Is the American Cancer Society. I would go as far as to say that you can interpret Laura's research in a different way. The fact is that she says that there's a 10% decline in serious breast cancer cases. Well, the fact is that we've got a 40% increase in early detection, a 10% decline in late detection. So to my thinking, somebody's doing something right when we see more cancer cases and less serious cases. I think the key message here is that testing is not treatment, and we need to get that message out. The mere fact that you're tested gives information. It identifies that you may have an issue. How that issue is treated is between you and your physician. We know there are two types of cancer. We know that prostate cancer and breast cancer are so similar. We know that there's an indolent form. We know that there's an aggressive form. I was unfortunate enough to have the aggressive form. If Kaiser had tested me every year, I might not have had to go through 2 years of testing. And by the way, we're also working with Kaiser. And the problem is that when ACS responds the way they did yesterday, if you look carefully at Brawley's response, he doesn't even mention prostate cancer. It's like a second-class citizen. And I just want to say that if there's one message that we should get out from this program and from this whole issue is that men do need testing as early as 40 now, according to the new AUA, the American Urological Association guidelines. And if they are identified with a high PSA, it doesn't even mean they have cancer. But then they need to start working with their primary care physicians initially. And the primary care physicians need to understand that there are many choices, including active surveillance for prostate cancer, which we promote highly, which may require no treatment at all.
Okay, Rick, I thank you for that call. And just for the record here, I want to read the statement by the American Cancer Society. Put out under Mr. Brawley's name, Otis Brawley, who is the chief medical officer for the ACS. He says, quote, "While the advantages of screening for some cancers have been overstated, there are advantages, especially in the case of breast, colon, and cervical cancers. Mammography is effective. Mammograms work, and women should continue to get them. The American Cancer Society stands by its recommendation that women age 40 and over should receive annual mammography, and women at high risk should talk with their doctors about when screening should begin based on their family history." He also said about prostate screening, "Since 1997, the American Cancer Society has recommended that men talk to their doctor and make an informed decision about whether or not prostate cancer early detection testing is right for them. This recommendation also still stands." But I'm getting these kind of emails. This is an email from a listener named David who says, "These docs are repeating themselves. We get it. Screening has limitations, and all cancers aren't the same. But let's hear what screening can do." Well, I think we just did.
Well, and let me sort of comment on that. I think if you see that there is no question that the number of advanced cancers that are detected have certainly come down with prostate cancer screening. I think that's pretty clear from the SEER data. And again, we are not saying that all screening is bad. Far from it. We are just saying we want to make sure that people are aware, you know, of the limitations of this information. And again, it's what you do with the information.
You know, Dr. Esterman, you've made that abundantly clear, and yet I'm not even certain why, but I'm getting emails like this. I just want to put this on the record here by a listener named Jane, who says, with, I think, some heat because there are 3 exclamation marks after this, "We are sending out the wrong message to women, especially when they are at risk due to genetic predisposition. Screening at 42 years of age, mammogram saved my life by showing calcifications and what later was determined as malignant cancer at a very early stage, 2 millimeters. This was 13 years ago. BRCA1 and BRCA2 tests were negative. I listen to your programs and appreciate them. Today you're sending out the wrong message." I don't believe we are sending out the wrong message.
We are not sending out the wrong message. What we're trying to say is what we want is better care for patients. I want better care for my patients. I also want to say that screening mammography is one tool, but we need to find other tools as well. Right. And so I'm saying that people also need to focus on screening for people who may be at high risk and trying to understand how we can better treat those. For example, when we find people who have an inherited predisposition to breast and ovarian cancer, say BRCA1 or BRCA2, we actually screen them more intensively. We start earlier. We'll start as early as 30. We'll alternate mammograms and MRIs at 6-month intervals because we understand that those cancers can grow pretty quickly. And so we tailor screening. The message is about tailoring screening. I actually think that older women who are over 70 or 75, I don't think that's a group of women. I think that's a group where, you know, that's where the data stops. There isn't evidence that it's better after the age of 70 or 75. And the kinds of cancers people get as they get older are much more likely to be these less aggressive.
Well, almost all men of that age have prostate cancer.
Right, and so I think that you want to be thinking about the ways in which you should screen. And again, when you say talk to your physicians about screening, it's a good thing to make sure that you prepare women and men for screening. And I'm sure George does the same thing. You know, we want to tell people, I only screen the very highest risk women with MRI. Because I don't want to do more harm than good. And I make sure that I explain to them, what can you expect? You know, you could expect a normal test. You expect something where we think we're very suspicious and we'll have to go do a biopsy. Or we might find something in between. And that's going to be, you know, 30% of the time we're going to come up with stuff that we can say, we're not sure what that is. And it's most of the time not going to be anything. But I don't want you to be so frightened when that comes up. So, again, in regular screening, telling people what to expect and making sure we understand that will help prepare them for what happens when the information comes up and gives us an opportunity to start to learn and tailor our recommendations and do a better job with the information we have.
Dr. Sledge, actually a couple questions for you, and Dr. Esterman kind of touched on this in a way, and a lot of people are asking about specificity where the risks of radiation are concerned. Could I get you on record on that?
Well, sure. I think the risk of radiation for certainly for a woman who is over the age of 40 is negligible. We know this because when we have looked at long-term studies of people getting radiation, either radiation for diagnostic purposes or radiation exposure for other reasons, the breast is sensitive to radiation from a carcinogenicity standpoint, but that sensitivity is almost entirely in younger women. And the evidence that radiation leads to any increase in carcinogenicity in older women is negligible. So I think that actually should not be part of the equation for the population of women we're talking about.
Could you also talk about how this all fits into the equation where healthcare costs are concerned, since the current debate about healthcare reform has centered so much on healthcare costs?
Sure. Well, I think the more expensive the diagnostic test is, the more money we're going to spend. It's going to lead to other tests, other biopsies, et cetera. So I think anyone who thinks that this is cheap or free, is probably misguided. Having said that, it is also expensive to die of cancer. I think there are a lot of savings to be made by early detection in terms of things downstream, such as chemotherapy or end-of-life care, which can be very, very expensive. So it's not a simple equation from a financial standpoint. I think, physicians, of course, will tell you that their primary interest is saving lives. So we want to do that certainly in the most cost-efficient way. But at the end of the day, we want to save the most lives.
Again, Dr. George Sledge is professor of oncology and co-directs the breast cancer program at Indiana University and is president-elect of the American Society of Clinical Oncology. Let me go to more of your calls. And Sue, you're on. Good morning. Sue, are you there? One more time, Sue.
Okay, yes.
Oh, okay, we didn't hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, pardon me. I feel very uncomfortable with the idea of even suggesting that we might not have mammograms available for everybody in sight, because I was at about age 45. I started having mammograms every year at Kaiser. Because my mother had cervical cancer and I was concerned. I also had taken hormone replacement therapy for 9 years. During that time, at one point, after about 8 years, my breast started getting swollen and very ultra-sensitive, hormonal sensitivity, and I mentioned that to my physician, and so we cut back on the dosage. But anyway, then I had a mammogram and found a lot of calcification, and so the radiologist said we're going to keep an eye on this one spot. And the next year I had the mammogram and they said you better have a biopsy. Turned out it was invasive cancer, very small, very low grade cancer, slow growing, fortunately. But I took my mammograms to a surgeon at Kaiser who looked at it and saw my mammogram loaded with calcifications and said, oh, we're going to have to do a mastectomy and probably take out your lymph nodes, too. And I thought, eh. So I did a lot of research on it. I got 7 second opinions, part of that, 5 of them being the cancer panel at Stanford, and all of them agreed that I should not have I should only have a lumpectomy and a sentinel node biopsy, whereby they check the lymph nodes to see if there's any cancer spread to that area. And I found in Kaiser Santa Clara, there's a really good breast cancer department in the surgery. I had a lumpectomy done there, and they found no cancer in the lump that was taken, although they had the core biopsy had indeed determined that I had cancer. So I'm kind of not sure. I wonder if all my cancer was removed in the core biopsy, because the woman at the San Francisco Kaiser who did the core biopsy was very careful, and she... During the biopsy, she told me that she was doing more than she had expected to, because she...
Yeah, I think, once again, you're talking about over-treatment.
And, yes, over-treatment.
We're getting a lot of emails along those lines, as I'm sure, well, Dr. Sledge and Dr. Esserman
have. Right, so I think that in any situation, I obviously we can't comment on your specific situation without studying it carefully or having you come in to see one of us, but I think, again, we want to make sure that everyone is aware, both consumers, patients, and physicians,
you know, of the issues that are involved. We are not saying that screening is bad. What we want to do is give people an opportunity to improve what they do because they understand some of the, you know, what some of the problems are that are generated by screening and some of the good things that are generated, you know, that are generated by screening. The more we understand, the more we can improve it and make it better. So screening is not perfect, and we definitely can overdiagnose things. Sometimes, you know, calcifications are very common, and you can have a little focus of disease, and the rest of the calcifications cannot be associated with it. And we get very alarmed sometimes and want to take out all the calcifications, and that may or may not be necessary. So it's just making sure that people are aware of it. And I think this will open the door also for us to rethink what we do with a diagnosis of precancer, what we now call ductal carcinoma in situ. We've always assumed that all of these kinds of lesions are necessarily going to go on to cancer, and I think that's highly unlikely to be so, and this may open the door for, you know, different ways of treating and approaching those lesions, and that's a good place for watchful waiting and or more thoughtful approaches. And we want to make sure that we're aware that overdiagnosis can happen, so it gives us an opportunity to start studying doing less without people being frightened that we're putting their life on the line.
Dr. Sledge, yes.
Yeah, if I may add, I think the caller story is wonderful in several ways. First, of course, screening mammography here did detect a small cancer, and this is exactly what we want to find with screening mammography, cancers that are not large, that have not spread, and certainly, again, the randomized trials that have been done suggest that this saves lives. Secondly, the issue around hormones. I think as a result of the Women's Health Initiative study that was published several years ago, we now know that, in particular, for postmenopausal women, the combination of estrogen and progesterone, such as Prempro, clearly increases the risk of developing breast cancer. And one of the major changes that's occurred in the last few years since Prempro use has declined is that we've actually seen a decline in new breast cancers in the United States. So I think that's very important. But I think finally, and perhaps most importantly of all, I'm impressed by and congratulate you on your persistence. I think all women, if they have any questions whatsoever, it's reasonable and appropriate always to get a second opinion. Your first doctor may not always get it right, and getting a second opinion is inestimably valuable for many patients. And I think you're a classic case of that.
And Miranda, thank you for waiting. Join us, please.
Miranda, San Francisco. Great program that they always are, Michael. My question, Michael, is what next? ICE closed. The new health reform is cutting back on Medicare. Medi-Cal, which my mother fortunately does not need, but many of her friends do, have already cut seniors out of Dentical. And now we hear that if you're over 75, you shouldn't be getting mammograms. I'd like to know why.
Dr. Sledge.
Well, that was Laura's age group, but I think I'm in general agreement here.
I assumed you would be, but
yeah. The simple answer is that first, older women are less likely to have the more aggressive tumors. They're more likely to have slower growing estrogen sensitive breast cancers, and secondly and importantly, older women die of other things than breast cancer. Once one reaches a certain age, the likelihood of dying of breast cancer is far less likely, relatively speaking, than the likelihood of dying of a heart attack or a stroke or many of the other ailments that one gets with age. Any reasonable analysis of risk and benefit in older women, I think, would suggest that this is probably not money that's as well spent.
You want to add something, Laura?
Yeah, I think it's important thing, you know, and George said it beautifully, but I think, you know, first of all, there is no data, no study has shown that finding these kinds of slow-growing cancers, cancers that are commonly found in older women, make any difference in whether people live or die or make any difference in the kinds of treatments they get. So there isn't a value, and there you get much more of the harm without any of the benefits. And I think that, you know, in this era where we're trying to personalize and tailor treatment, I think people should welcome the opportunity to safely be able to do less and not be afraid that someone's taking something away or that it's because we're trying to have cost-effective care. This is something where we think that it's a benefit that we can do better, that we could do better by our patients, and we can not put them through the agony of being called back or having biopsies or finding disease that we don't need to know about early, and it's not helping them. We don't want to do, every intervention in medicine isn't a good intervention, right? So sometimes we do understand that we want to do what's appropriate and what helps, and we want to make sure that we have the opportunity to not do things that don't help. And that's we have to do a lot of that to try and help us get to the point where we're making care better and tailored and personalized.
Let me think, Miranda. We'll try to get another quick call on, then that's you, Kathleen. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. My sister had had breast cancer, but all of her screening was negative, but she had a lump and she wanted that lump out, and when they took the lump out, it was positive. In between, she had had the mammogram, cone magnification, FNA, core biopsy. All of those were negative. She said, I want the lump out. The lump was taken out, and it was cancer. So you can have it, you know, even a cone magnification, even a core biopsy or an FNA doesn't always get at exactly where it might be. And subsequently, she died from breast cancer that metastasized to her brain and to her spine.
So I want to make a point here about this is a really important point, and we want to say one of the limitations of mammography is that they do not always pick up the fastest-growing tumors. And if someone's got a mass that they think has grown and shown up, even if they've had a normal mammogram 6 months before, that's the kind of thing that physicians should be aware and the patient should be aware to push to having it, biopsied or taken out, because those are the kinds of cancers that can be very aggressive and can be missed by mammography just because they're growing. It's just because they're growing that fast. So we want people to be aware of that they need to bring that to their physician's attention.
A very important note to end on, and I thank you and the caller, and thanks, Dr. Esserman, for being with us. Laura Esserman is the lead author of this new study, Rethinking for Breast Cancer and Prostate Cancer, in the new issue of JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association. Thanks also to Dr. Sledge. George Sledge is professor of oncology and co-directs the breast cancer program at Indiana University and is president-elect of the American Society of Clinical Oncology. And our thanks to Dr. J. Leonard Lichtenfeld, who joined us earlier, Deputy Chief Medical Officer with the American Medical Society. I want to also thank our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and our producers, Kevin Guillory, Judy Campbell, and Tina Larberg, and our interns, Matthew Colley, Jim Levo, Dimitri Kesselman, and Mariah Dickerson. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.